Okay, welcome everybody. Someone joined while we were trying to get it recorded, but let's get started, and there may be some more people joining us as we go. We do these PLCs every other week, pretty much regularly. We're in an interesting time because the new RFPs will be coming out this summer, but I'll tell you in a minute why we're going to be talking a lot about the new RFAs, I'm sorry, that come out this summer. We're going to get started on them because it is very applicable to current grantees, new grantees, and people who want to learn about the program and thinking about perhaps applying for federal assistance. So before we get started, everyone who's on the PLC list will get notes on Friday. But if you are new or someone recommended, maybe you call this number at this time, send your contact information to hmtri@eicc.edu. And that's our contact information file, hmtri@eicc.edu. HMTRI stands as an acronym for our Hazardous Materials Training and Research Institute. We've been working with grantees and people trying to start and successfully implementing job training programs since basically the turn of the century, since it started 25 years ago. So we've talked to a lot of people and we've seen strategies at work, and we've kind of followed EPA as EPA goes along. We don't speak for EPA, which gives us an advantage. We talk to grantees and see what works for grantees. We see what doesn't work. Our grantees are our mentors, and they're the people that really have the boots on the ground and have done this, and they know what works and what doesn't. And we just take that information and we coalesce it and we try to pass it on. The main objective of our program, the HMTRI program, is basically to collectively network people, find out strategies that work, share information, try to get people who are interested in starting a program, jumpstart them to push them towards developing a program plan and applying for federal assistance, perhaps, if they want to. And once they get a program started, try to guide them along. The big thing we have is annual meetings in Washington, in Alexandria, once a year. Of course, with COVID, we haven't had that. We've done a virtual all-grantee meeting this year. There will be one in December in Oklahoma, hopefully, if this pandemic seems to go the way it's going. That'll be in December 8th. We typically do news from Washington now, and I have some of my compadres with me, but right now everybody's in different places. In fact, I got a call from Steve Fenton. He said, I'm in the emergency room because I got gallstones or something. So he says, is it okay if I don't do this one? I said, yes, please, Steve, don't do this. So I'm going to go do the news from Washington before we get started. Now, basically what's happening in Washington is, in my opinion, is they're preparing. They're getting ready for our application. They go over it with a fine-tooth comb and have told us it'll be out this summer. And for those of you who have been around, know how this works. They send out an RFA, request for applications. It used to be called an RFP. The RFA is extremely detailed. And they give you 60 days to respond. So when we back up these dates, we see a August request. Maybe they'll be more aggressive and do one in July. But then the clock is ticking. They give you 60 days to respond. The problem we have with that is this is a very detailed, and I'm going to start talking about an overview on this, very detailed program plan. You really almost have to have your program all laid out before you even apply. Once you apply, we talked about threshold criteria last PLC, they will scan all of the grants that are submitted, and there's obviously going to be some that aren't eligible or they shouldn't not that they shouldn't be applying, but they're just, they're not fundable because they haven't followed the threshold criteria, or they're asking more that's allowed, or some obvious reasons. And you could go back to our toolbox. It's called brownfields-toolbox.org. And I'll, for those of you, anyone taking notes, you don't need to, because everything will be in these PLC notes that you get on Friday. But the threshold criteria, the purpose of that is to screen the people who really don't need to go on to the next level, which is very detailed. And we're gonna do an overview today, and then future PLCs, we're going to get into the weeds. But as I back this up, and I said they give you 60 days to respond, but you really need about 4 months. And that does sound like a lot, but it's not 4 months of your continuous effort. There's a lot of things that we're going to talk about, calling meetings, recruiting partners, trying to get into City Hall, maybe making some public announcements. So there's a lot of things early on that you need to do that take lead time. And you don't want to, you can't in a month or two crunch these numbers and gather all this background information. It's just too much, and there's too many lead times and lags between emails and meetings to do this. So this is why we're starting. And the reason this is good for existing grantees and people who are thinking about doing this is, as you look at your program, there's always room for improvement. And you could think about it, and it's been a year now since those of you who just were funded when you were writing your grants. And those of you who are in the class of 20 will be wanting to re-up.
Hello?
The way these RFAs work, yes. Someone
Hello?
Just joined? Did someone just join?
Hello?
Hey, what's up?
Oh,
nothing
okay.
much.
Okay. My home will be there about...
I think we've got someone
okay.
on the line. Could you put your
mm-hmm.
call
All
on
right.
hold?
Yeah. No oh, problem.
Okay, someone. One question. Is,
okay.
We always have, this is an open line, so all mics are open. So if you want, just don't put us on hold, but put us on mute. Also, if you're wearing a headset like I do, you're going to pick up every voice in the room. So there's something to be aware of. So anyway, for those of you thinking of getting involved, those of you who are the class of 20, and it's time to re-up, the class of 21 who just awarded grantees won't be able to reapply, but the class of 20, now there are 26 of you in the class of 20. So we're really going to have to focus you on upping your game, because there's going to be 26 people looking to re-up. There'll be some new grantees and some old alumni grantees that haven't been funded in a while. So that's the reason we're starting early. We're starting, some of this may be a little repetitive, or you may say, I remember that, but it'll refresh your memory, and we're really hoping we could use you as mentors. So it applies both to those thinking of becoming grantees or funding, want to learn about the program. Those of you in the class of 20 who were funded in 20 are going to want to really soup up that grant, because it'll be very competitive this year, and of course, new grantees who are just getting started, it'll refresh your memory and perhaps think about what you need to do as you implement your program. We always start with this news from Washington, and I talked about Brownfields 21 that's in December coming out of Washington, and we'll be there and we'll have a booth and we'll also have some special sessions, but that's a little ways off. We'll be getting to you back on that. Another thing that happened in Washington was, of course, and we announced this last time, these MAC grantees, we're the work side of the house, the workforce. The other side of the house is the boots on the ground, technically, the cleanup, the assessing of these sites, the financial end, and the cleanup. And we're interested in that because of the cleanup. These are the people that will be hiring us, their contractors will be hiring our people as they graduate. And EPA likes to know that we're in touch, involved, and familiar with the assessment, multi-purpose assessment and cleanup grants. They want to know that we're coordinated. The funding is all coming out of the same office. We look at them as kind of a sister program. And I mention this because for any of you, whether you're new, old, or prospective, you're going to want to get to know your cleanup grantees know who they are, contact information, touch base, and introduce yourself. And one step, and if you need to find out how to do that, we'll be talking more about that, but there's a good tool that I'm going to put on the notes, and it shows, it's all about when people have to respond to ACRES. This is a system-wide grant tracking system. They put this information on that, and it's very accessible at the EPA website, and it'll tell you, for example, Rochester just got a cleanup, a MAC grant, they call them. It's a cleanup grant on 42nd York Street property, you know. So right away, you know the community that they're working in, and I'll tell you why that's relevant in a second. Another thing you'll want to find out is opportunity zones. So this all goes into when you start defining where are we going to be training, where are our people going to be working, where is there potential for us to be having our training going on, and that type of thing. So that's basically the news from Washington. I do want to give a shout-out, though, to Sharon Beard. She's not with EPA, and you've heard the name before. She's with NIEHS, and, of course, we use all these acronyms, National Institute for Environmental Health Sciences. They're not EPA. They really come out of a different branch of government, but they're part of NIH, a much bigger organization. But NIEHS is charged with health and safety of the workforce, and they have some sister programs to ours. We look at them as a very close ally and mentor to us. They have a worker career training program, which is very similar to ours, has many similar objectives. It's oriented more towards health and safety, where ours, because we're an EPA, are oriented more towards environmental justice, environment, serving communities in the environment. But our objectives are the same in both of them. So you're going to see a lot of things when we put in articles and meetings by NIEHS. And in fact, we'll probably have, well, last year we had a joint meeting with them at the National Brownfields Conference. But Sharon Beard has headed up that program for 25 years, and she's great. She came in as an intern and stayed, and she's done a great job there. And she has always, whenever we ask for NIH assistance or help with talking to our grantees, she's never said, I can't make it. She's always made time. And that's just the way Sharon is. And she's been promoted. She's now... she replaced Chip Hughes, and who moved on to some OSHA programs in Washington. But Sharon is now going to be working on the whole worker training program for NIEHS. With that, combined with the 25 years of service, it was clear she was recognized by the American Industrial Hygiene Association, which she is. She's an industrial hygienist. And she received the Rachel Carson Award this year, which is not bestowed upon anyone lightly. So we wanted to give out this shout out to Sharon Beard, and you'll probably hear that name on and off. And for those of you who have been around, do recognize that name. And she may not have the time to work with us directly in the future, but she's going to get some very capable people that will work with us. On the HMTRI front, what we're doing is, of course, we're in the process of developing this grantee directory, and you'll be getting a SurveyMonkey. Some of you have already sent some information in. You don't have to send anything more until you get the SurveyMonkey. And this directory lists all the contact information of all the grantees, which will be helpful for you contacting each other when your graduation dates will be, what your core curriculum looks like, what your training. It's a great idea to see what other people are doing and get in touch. And what we're going to do with that directory and a little bit about the graduates, we're going to be distributing that to potential national employers. So when we get to Brownfields, there's a lot of national firms that are doing work locally, which those of you who are grantees are probably already working with these national firms, but they'll have easier access to our grantee contacts. The other thing the HMTRI has been working on is just getting all that information from our all grantee meeting up on our toolbox. It's our toolbox is brownfields-toolbox.org. And on there is a website that's dedicated or being dedicated to our last all grantee meeting. So far, we've got all the PowerPoints posted, and we're beginning to post all the Zoom conferences, which will be, that's taking a little longer. And we're hoping to get that. We got a few up there. We'll be getting more up there, and it'll also probably be on YouTube. So you could actually sit down and listen to tens of hours of our Zoom meeting. One of the things we always talk about, and we'll have these in the post-session notes, are questions from grantees. And if you have any questions, you could respond to the that we send out Friday. You could, if you have a question or you want to be removed from the list or you know someone who wants to be added to the list, you put their contact information in. But we always, anyone has any questions, they could just send that, respond to the notes and or send to HMTRI at EICC.edu. But these questions that have popped up, and this happens every year. In fact, I was asked recently what questions usually pop up from your grantees. And I'd say number one, when the RFA comes out and when it will come out, two questions are going to pop up. Well, one is, this year, is there going to be a Plan B required? If those of you who wrote grants last year, you remember you had to do your training plan, and then you had to do a Plan B, which said, what if COVID persists? Are you going to have an alternative plan? We don't know that yet, what they're going to be asking in the RFA. They may be asking what you've learned from the pandemic, or have you changed your training approach. There may be some words that you'll be adding about what you've done for those of you who have been training this last year, or what you would be doing if for some reason we do have an interruption like we had over the year. So that's the first question. The second question I think is relevant to some of you on the call. They read this RFA and it is daunting. And they say, should I submit? We're interested in funding, but we've discovered this is not a one-pager. This is more like a 33-pager, 15 pages in the narrative and 15 pages of attachments and three-page cover letter. It's quite involved. And they say, we read this, and we don't know that we're ready. And they say, maybe we should wait till next year. And they say, well, what do you think? And I say submit. I always say submit. And there's several reasons I say submit. One is, if you do this this year, you're going to do the same thing next year, and you'll never submit. It takes a while to prep. We always suggest, when you start developing your partnerships and everything, say, we're applying for this, or we're re-upping for this. There's no guarantee we're going to get it. It's an annual competition. But we've got to get our ducks in line, and it takes a while, and we want to include you in this grant. So you need to go ahead and assume you're going to get it. And if you write a good grant, you will. Many grantees come in and they don't write a real comprehensive grant, and they don't get it, or they miss it by a few points. But that's okay, because they're not alone. Often other people are rejected. But when you're rejected, several things happen. You get to sit down with EPA people. You get to go over your grant application and find out where you're weak. You will probably be put on their listserv so that when ideas come up or people, they may have suggestions of who you may want to partner with, which is the biggest part of this grant. They will keep you in touch. One thing about regional coordinators in each of the regions, they really are rooting for their grantees. They want you to get that grant as much as you do. And they're going to help you along, and they'll nurture you. And they'll also probably guide you to us, not only these PLC calls where we'll share information, but the annual meeting, the resources that are available, and the sharing of information with successful grantees. So that second question is, Yes, always submit. Now, you're going to have to be able to, last week in the PLC, and the notes are up on the toolbox, we talked about the threshold criteria. You're going to, if you want to get past the first 15 days, you have to pass the threshold criteria. And this is it's a simple checklist, but it's not necessarily simple. You have to show your eligibility because you're a nonprofit or you work for your government organization. And you have to be familiar with the DUNS, getting your DUNS number in order, your nonprofit paperwork. You've got to get onto grants.gov and be able to work with SAMS, that's a system for award management that EPA and all the government agencies have. So you can get on there and you can see if you can pass that threshold. And if you can, you want to go on to the next part of this and called ranking criteria. First, they just scan everybody to see, okay, is this in or out? Is it less than 200,000 or 200,000? Do they meet the basic criteria? And they find that out in 15 days. And I would refer people back to our notes from last time where we talked about threshold criteria. Once you pass that, it's the big evaluation. And the way EPA evaluates it, they try to be as objective as they can. It's 109 points. Now I'm basing all of this on last year. And what I found over the years, and we're going on about 20 years of RFAs, they're very similar with tweaks. So there may be, maybe it won't be 109, maybe 112. They may ask a few more questions, but basically it'll be the same. And what I want to do today is I want to give you an overview of what that ranking criteria looks like and things that you really want to start getting started today. I will say there's a lot of things you can do in the last month of once this announcement is made. In fact, there's some things you'll want to do. They're last-minute grantsmanship things, writing the grant. But there are things that are going to take a while. And I wanted to get started early in this PLC to focus on those things that take months, not weeks or days to do that. One thing about this ranking criteria, there's seven or maybe eight criteria that they use, and they break up the grants and they give them to committees and they start running through your answers and they'll assign you a point total. And these points every year, they get finer and finer level of detail, which we'll talk about in future grantees, PLCs. I don't think we need to, there's many of them to discuss and we won't talk. I want to give you an overview first. But if we look at those ranking criteria, there's some things you want to keep in mind. You're going to want to seek every point possible because the way this works, you pass threshold, you go to ranking, and they rank all these on almost like a little test, and they take the highest point totals, and those highest point totals is a cutoff. And depending on how much money they have, their $200,000 grants, if they get $3 million for the program, they're going to award 15 grants. If they get $4 million, they're going to award 20 grants. They'll take the top 20 scores and draw a line. That's not totally the end of it because there's another thing that we'll talk about in the future. It's called special circumstances. And this is the subjective part of this whole evaluation. So you have threshold criteria, ranking criteria, and special conditions. So you want to get every point possible in this ranking criteria. Never, ever skip a question. Never leave anything unanswered or you're going to get a zero on that one. You never want to assume that evaluators are going to know your program. These may be total strangers. There is a part of this evaluation where people who know you can provide some input. For the most part, though, it's not, and this is not, does not work to the advantage of existing grantees. It's not how good you performed in the past. There's a little bit of that, but for the most part, it's what's in that grant. And what's in that grant is what they know. And the people may not even know who you are. So you've got to be very specific when you're writing these grants. And you, of course, you want to use numbers. Our most successful grantees, one of the first thing we say is, what do you think you made your grant so good? And they said, we used lots of numbers. We were very quantitative as we answered these questions. The other thing is going to be partnering. And we're going to, actually, next time we're going to spend a lot of time on partnering. But partnering occurs on three different levels. There's partnering with your community, which they put a big value on. There's partnering with your employers. Again, put tremendous, because these are the people who are your people. There's partnering with governmental agencies. And of course, these are the people who are going to leverage your funds. They're going to get you on the inside rather than be on the outside. So it's very important that you're familiar with all those. And then of course, there's partnering with your supporters. These are the people who are going to be providing in-kind assistance to you. They may be giving you financial assistance. More important, they may be giving you services that you're going to need that EPA doesn't support. So let me, I'm going to summarize this, the ranking criteria. And again, what we're trying to do is just give you an introduction to ranking criteria. And for those of you who are new, you may want to relook at these, and as we talk about these in the future, on how you can beef up your partnership development or your work with your community. But and this will be very similar to last year. The first one is community need, and out of 109 points, that's 20 points. You're going to see that everything that has to do with partnerships almost contributes about half of how they grade you. The description of your program and your community, the labor market demand, the labor market assessment that you do, these are going to be extremely important, and it's going to take most of your time because you've got to find out, and you're going to need this for threshold, you've got to find out, do we need a program? Do we have a program? Are there employers in our community? This labor market assessment is critical. There's no sense in training people if they can't get jobs. So again, we'll be talking about this later, but doing a good labor market assessment, finding out what the demand is in the community. Now, leaving up to the Workforce Investment Board is not necessarily a good idea. Almost everyone uses their Workforce Investment Board, but there are good ones and bad ones. Some will give you a lot of support and some will give you almost nothing. You're just one of 20 programs that they're managing. And you may be very disappointed if you rely on the Workforce Investment Boards to work with your employers and even work with your community. They're rubber stamping things are coming in. They might see where someone's interested in a program, and they'll shove them over to one thing or another or refer them to you. That's in some programs, it's great. They'll do all the testing. They'll do everything, but some you can't count on that. So you've got to start developing these community relationships, and you're going to have to figure out what community it's going to be in. You're going to need that in all aspects of this. So you've got to sit back and you've got to find out what's active, what are the hot spots in our state? Where is the action? If the action is the southwest corner of the state, you want to start looking down in that part of the county. Now, as far as your graduates go, they'll probably work all different places within driving distance or in the state. But again, if your opportunity zones are in a corner of the state or in a city, if you're not only your opportunity zones, but if your MAC grants, where they're doing cleanups and is in a certain section, or there's a certain section that's underserved and there's a lot of government money being put in that community, this is where you're going to have to focus. And this is why, again, we're starting early, because you're going to have to ferret these things out, and it takes a while. You've got to, most of you may be able to just wing it. You could probably say, I know where the west side of Chicago is just a hotbed of underserved people, but there's also the south side. And these are areas that are underserved, high unemployment, lots of environmental issues. This is where we need to go. Well, in the case where you get a feel for it, you've got to start getting numbers, and that's where you're going to start targeting your group. And then you're going to have to start looking for partners. And when you look for partners, those partners are also probably focusing in target areas. So you've got to, again, we're backing up because you're going to have to take some time. If you're talking to a social service agency, and you're going to want to contact one in your community, unless you are one, like Albro, you're going to want to find out where are your clients coming from? Where are you working? Is there a particular community that you're working in? For a lot of reasons, because they know where the problems are. They've been doing this for a long time. They're going to also be able to bring your program into theirs, and they're going to be able to help you with additional services. Or if you're too small and you don't feel that you can apply this year, which gets back to my original question, you may want to partner with them and let them apply for the grant and subgrant to you. So you may be doing training, everything you want to do, you may be doing, but they may be your fiscal agent, and they may be the one that'll submit the grant. And we've got many grantees like that. It works just well. You have the advantage of all of their resources, but at the same time, you're going to be able to do the environmental job training. So, again, step back and find out who is working in this area. And, again, this is where community need comes in. You're going to want to pair it with your labor market demand. You're going to find out, again, where are the big employers? The obvious ones are the environmental firms, but there's tank manufacturers. There's delivery services. There are people working in demolition. There's waste yards. There's lots of peripheral things. And we'll have to talk about that when we get into doing a good labor market assessment. But I think you need to get started now in getting a good feel for your grant. And if you're a new grantee, you may need to go back and relook at some of these things. You may say, well, where is the action going on in my state and my community? And maybe you might have to do a mid-course shift as you see the demand. Because if you're in some suburb somewhere and the action is on the west side or the south side, you're going to be struggling through your whole grant, and for no reason, because there's a huge demand on the other side of town. So that's the first ranking criteria. The second one is budget. Now, we'll take that you could do in the last month or so I'm going to skip over it. It's 6 points. We'll talk about it later. There is program structure. It's called program structure, and it's 19 points. And, of course, this requires things like a 70% placement rate. But they also ask about your recruitment strategy, how you're going to be screening your students, how you're going to be retaining them. Again, how you can sustain your program. How can students get to your program, which we kind of briefly talked about in target area. And what kind of partners you're going to be having. Well, this is fairly important and starts early. Again, it ties into that number one. This is not a linear grant writing proposal. It's more like a jigsaw puzzle where all these things are going to fit together. And you may get halfway through this thinking and then decide you have to change your target community or changing your program. You may find that your target community, it ties into curriculum, which is another one we're going to talk about here in a second. But this program structure, you have to have 70% placement, which gets back to your labor market assessment. And you're going to have to be able to retain your students, which gets back to your target community. Again, if you're training in a suburb somewhere and all your students are in the inner city, it's not going to work. It's just going to be struggling. So the next biggest one besides the first one I mentioned, was the community employment partnerships. And again, as I said, these all link. These are the MAC grantees. Are you connecting with your MAC grantees? You're going to have to get them eventually to write you support letters. What is the quality of your partners? Partnerships are everything in this grant. And those who have good, solid partners are usually the ones that get the grants. Now, there is an exception to this. If you're a large agency and you've got all of the resources within your own agency, you don't may not need as many social partners as you would otherwise. You have to remember, this grant only covers it really only covers the environmental courses. And for all those other things that you need in terms of life skills, and you're going to have partners. And so they have a 28 points that they assign to community and employer partnerships. And of course, the partnerships, as I already discussed, are those governmental partners, your support partners that are going to be doing things like life skills. Your employers are going to be key. Those are all, and of course, your community from what you're recruiting. You've got to, there are communities that are very negative to environmental remediation, and they may not accept this very well because they've been victimized. They've been, people came, built factories, polluted their community and left. And then the people that are cleaning it up are people that are coming in and getting rich and then leaving. So you've got to convince your community through these public meetings that you're going to have that this is a positive for the community. It's a way of EPA trying to make up for some wrongs perhaps in the past, where community people can get jobs, good paying jobs, and develop new careers. So this whole thing about partnerships is important. And again, as I said, the things you want to start on now and start doing not a deep dive, but a thinking is this whole thing of community need and partnership development. These are the ones that take all the time. There's another one called leveraging, which kind of falls into place. That'll work with your partnerships. That again, you could wait for the last 2 months, and if you've got your partners lined up and they're going to be agreeing to leverage, it'll be a matter of getting them to support you, and you now starting to identify how you're going to leverage your program. There is a section, number 7 is programmatic capability. And that talks about your experience and your grant management system. The importance of this, it comes in early, on programmatic capability is if you're weak, you're a standalone and you want to start a program, you may find that you don't have a lot of program capability. You don't have a lot of experience. You haven't ever done a federal grant, and that's okay. They've allowed for that so that you don't necessarily have to have had an environmental workforce grant. You don't have to have a lot of experience, but you're going to have to demonstrate your partners and the people working with you do have that. And that's where this, again, it links back to partnerships. If you're a small organization, you're just getting your feet wet and you want to get a federal grant, and this happens all the time, you've got to start developing some partnerships. And this is, again, links back to the threshold criteria. You may make a decision that, well, he told me I need to apply, but I think I'm not only small, but I may be too small, and I may have to partner with someone. And at that point, and this is now the time, go to a social service agency, go to a Goodwill, go to a youth build, and say, we'd like to implement this program, and we think the time is now. It's an environmental workforce program. We can combine the best of what you have and the best that we could bring to the program, and let's partner. And we would ask if you've got the capability to be the fiscal agent. You submit the grant, and we'll be your partner. So this is where this, and they could bring to the table this whole programmatic capability, and they could use your your resources and your abilities and your experience or your interests, and they could add it to their areas. Perhaps they've never worked in an environment where they haven't really thought about it, and they could use your program to supplement theirs to make a real killer program. And we got a youth build on the call, and there are several youth builds. Of course, the one we always, the standout program is Cypress Mandela up there in near San Francisco. Great program, started as youth build, expanded primarily construction, but then brought in an environmental component that is tremendous, tremendous leverage, tremendous service to community, tremendous placement, close to 100% all the time, generates not only good numbers, but the curriculum is incredible. And that's all a result of bringing this interest into a bigger program. So this is kind of an overview, and we do try to keep these down to 30 minutes, usually a little more, but I want to give you an overview this week, and 2 weeks from now, we'll be talking about these labor market and community assessments. The one thing I haven't mentioned yet is other factors. For those of you who say, okay, I'm new. This is the question I asked in the beginning. I'm new. Do I have a chance against these sharks? These guys have been doing it for 20 years, and I congratulate them. In fact, we're going to have a shout-out this year to Limitless Vistas, a fantastic organization. They've had, and I have to tell you, every program has to compete fresh every year. And they're competing. Sometimes I think it's a negative to be an experienced program, but they've had six re-ups. These are 2 years. You can only submit every other year. But they've had six of these, 16, 20, 2016, 2020, 2012, 2010, 2012, 2014, 2016, 2018, 2021. They have been successful every other year in getting their grant. It's fantastic. But their grant is the best. So you can't say we're not going to fund this program because we fund it too much. It's good, and it stands up amongst the others. But in other factors, though, now I'll have to say on the other side of that coin, the 2021 awards, half, there were 18 awards, half went to brand new grantees who have never had it, and half went to capable, you know, experienced grantees who re-upped. So in other factors, they balance these things out. There is a playing field. And I have to say, the 2020 grantees, those are the ones that have grants now, but they're running out and they're capable to re-up. They're gonna have to up their game because there's 26 of them, and there'll be some new ones. And they may, I don't know how they're gonna split them, but if they split them 50-50, you know, it's gonna be very competitive this year. So in these other factors, they do consider where you are. And this is in addition to your point totals. You can't write a one pager and then because you've got a very, very special situation, you're going to get the grant. These are not congressional. This goes through the agency and everything has to be justified. But if I say that everyone, and we'll talk about that as we get closer, everyone has to fill out special factors because every one of you has a special situation. And that may vary from you being in a rural community, less than 10,000 people. You may be a mining community. You may be new. You may be serving tribal population. You may be serving veterans or ex-offenders. You may be in poverty zones. So when someone says, I don't have any special factors, I say, no, please go back and develop a special factor, find it out, because we all have special factors. And it comes down to who's, you know, how, if you're 2 points away from being funded or 3 points or 5 points and you've got severe special factors, that'll probably put you into funding consideration. If you're if you're rated in these ranking criteria at a 12 or 15, special factors isn't going to help you. So that's how, and that's an overview of how these grants are going to come down in the coming months. And let's think about this in closing. We're sitting here towards the beginning of July, and they're going to, this is going to be coming out right now. You know, we're working blind. This is the way EP is. They'll just announce it, and then all of a sudden, 2 weeks from now or 4 weeks from now, they'll say, you know, here is the RFA, and send us your application in 60 days. So we're starting early. We're going to take our time, and we're going to go over these ranking criteria on how you can write a really complete application, and what the purpose of today's PLC is, to just to get you thinking and really focus on those, on the biggies. And the biggies is community, labor market assessment, and partnerships. And if you think about nothing else but that, and do you need to partner with someone rather than go it alone, or how you could reorient your partnerships, those are the things that would be really good to think about now in the next couple of weeks when we reconvene and talk about this some more. Well, has anyone got any questions about this whole process or about EPA in general or what's going to happen? Timelines, you know, timeline-wise, this will probably be due in September, end of September. And then it's a long wait. I mean, you'll be disqualified in 15 days if you don't meet threshold. But then you're going to have to wait all the way till spring. And when they make the announcements, it takes the EPA a long time. They do a really thorough job, as they did this year. It's going to pretty much follow last year's cycle. You'll get the awards in spring. And then by the time you get all your paperwork and grant stuff done, it'll be, you know, about this day. It's got to be before September of next year. So you'll really start training in the fall of 22. So this is, give you an idea on this time frame of how these grants work. Some of you may be starting a little earlier in August, July of 22, but that's kind of your time frame. Anyone have any questions or something they'd like to contribute today?
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Hi,
yes.
It's Andrea Fox from the whole program. With the EPA, you know, because this is the Brownfield grant, correct?
Correct.
Or it's okay. So, is there a difference between assessment grant and then the cleanup grant? Or when you apply for the grant, you can put it in. And then based on how you're putting your curriculum together, can it be split into those two areas if you were looking to have a grant for two, you know, for, of course, under one umbrella, but broken up into like the assessment grant and a cleanup grant?
Not possible. Again, we're talking smokestack government. You've got an appropriation that comes from Congress. It goes to what we call MAC. That's multipurpose assessment and cleanup. You have to submit to that separate, and they're going to judge you on their RFA. And actually, they just awarded those grants. Then this is a whole different smokestack, and this goes through the same office, but it's now the workforce side. It's now the work, the job development and training of people, and that'll come out in this summer. Probably in July or August, and that's actually what we're focusing on this PLC, and what we're talking about on that second grant, and they're both. It's interesting. They're both $200. This is $200,000 grant over 3 years. The first 2 years is where all the action is. Third year is a tie up, and this grant is repetitive. The cycles are every year, about this time, about $200,000. The only exception to that would be is if for some reason they up the number of grantees or they up the number of dollars that they contribute to the program. The more money this year, the more money they put in the program, the more grantees will get funded. We've been pushing for years, well, can you make it 300 or 400,000? Well, that hasn't happened. So So I don't know if that'll ever happen. It may.
Okay. What, appreciate it. You know, Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What we're focusing on is more money in the program for more grantees. We got plenty of grants that plenty of communities who want to develop these programs. More communities that want to develop than money. So that's the whole reason we got to have this screening process, this RFA. I would like to see a $5 million program with, you know, quite a few more. I have no idea of what the amount's going to be, because I've always said this program is EPA's best environmental justice program, I consider, in the agency, because they are getting jobs, and we've been doing this now for 20 years. They're giving jobs to underserved communities, underserved people who have been victimized. I mean, how much better can you be than that in terms of answering environmental justice? And so I'm always encouraged that we can get more money into the program. EPA has wanted to keep this small, and they feel you get too big and then people go after it. So that's pretty much where we stand as far as funding goes. Any other comments about anyone that has gone through this process and says it's a bear or it's not so bad once you get into it? Any comments? Okay. Well, look forward to our notes. It'll come out on Friday. If you're on the PLC list, you'll get them. If you're not on the PLC list, send your contact information to hmtri@eicc.edu. That's hmtri@eicc.edu. Well, with that, unless anyone else has anything to say, I will see you in a couple of weeks.
Awesome. Great information. Thank you. Have a great day and week.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the wonderful information.
Thank you.
Thank you.